हरिः ॐ सहनौ भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। Paramatma Sundarva, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 3. Bhagavan is the highest aspect of the Absolute Truth. Page 57. This means that everything else has temporary existence since his existence depends on his will. Now, until now, we have meditated on something with temporary existence. Now, however, we should meditate on what permanently exists. Satyam param dhimahi atato brahma jigyasa. Right, because we're comparing the beginning verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the beginning verse of the Vedanta Sutra. And we've also dealt with the aspect of the opening, the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the last verse. You know, to show that by these different things that is there. Oh no, that was Lord Chaitanya, isn't it? Who was dealing with this with the Mimamsa? That was here?
Maharaj, that was Atata Brahma Jigyasa, first Atha and second Atha.
Yes, but yes. No, but before that it was about the points of the Mimamsa, that according to the Mimamsa, you know, when they were quoting from, yeah, here, it's here, by Madhavacharya.
Vedanta Sutra, Satat.
Meaning of this particular passage. Oh, what is that? The first one. Yeah. Initial statement, concluding statement, repetition, uniqueness, result, praise, and reasoning. So now they're showing according to that. Okay. So, yes, and so that the Lord, by his desire, everything is happening. So, therefore, everything is dependent on him. There's nothing that's independent of him. He's the only independent person. Everyone else is part and parcel of him, or an expansion of him, or his energy is like this. Next, the supremacy, param, is explained with the word tamna. In the context, the word dhamma means by power or manifestation. Nanartha Varga of Amarkosh says, Dhamma means house, body, effulgence, or power. It does not mean the Lord's Sarup in this verse. Right? So it's not talking about his Sarup in this context. The word Kuhaka means cheating. Kuhaka refers to the power of Maya since it covers and bewilders the Sarupa, the Jiva, right? So Krishna, his Sarupa is not the one we're discussing here, but the Sarupa, the Jiva, becomes covered by Kuhaka, by Maya, right? So she cheats the living entity. It means he's wanting to be cheated by taking up this mood of trying to enjoy separately than Krishna, you know? So in other words, it would be like, it means you want something for yourself without its connection with Krishna. But Krishna is the source of everything. He is the one that makes everything work. So therefore, he being the complete whole, that means the Satchit and Ananda are part of him, right? So are him. And then everything that expands is based on these three principles. So now, Ananda means that bliss that is experienced. So now the bliss is him interacting with the devotees. So then an activity that's performed in devotion in context of Krishna, to please Krishna, him being pleased, then that whole endeavor, that whole environment, everyone involved becomes permeated with the same bliss that Krishna is experiencing. Right? So now if we decide, if we make the foolish mistake that it's the activity and the result that are the enjoyable part, they're the ones by through which it comes, right? So then I'm thinking, yes, I can just take this on my own and I can enjoy it on my own. But as soon as we have that on our own, then it's not, how you say it? Then Krishna's not permeating it as bliss, as existence, yes, as knowledge or other qualities, yes, but as bliss, no, right? And that everything, yes, of course, as he's pervading everything, everything will have a little bit of something in it that we would call happiness. But it's when he's pleased, then his, that mood, that pervade, permeates whatever is connected with that mood. In other words, the whole medium and everyone dealing with that, all the particular devotees that were rendering the service, then you get that whole flavor. So here is then the jiva, they become cheated because they think, no, it's the object itself that's important. You know, it's like saying the toaster is what's important, not the electricity. You know, but it doesn't work. You don't get the effect. So the Lord, then when we turn away from the Lord, then Maya cheats us because we don't see it connected to the Lord. So we don't get the experience of that in connection with the Lord. So there's no Ananda. Even though the jiva is Ananda, they look for Ananda, but they will never find Ananda. Thus, the meaning is, quote, we should meditate upon the eternal, highest form of Bhagavan, since the power of Maya, Kuhakam, is eternally, Sada, counteracted, Nirasta, by his Shakti, taking the form of his power or manifestation, Svena Tamna. It is said, Mayam Yudhasya Chich Chakya, Maya is rejected by the Chit Shakti. And because it's an external Shakti. So the Chit Shakti, it's not required for rendering service to Krishna, but it is part of the Sri Shakti. It's just there. I mean, so if you, just like Krishna being complete, therefore you have the biggest, you also have the smallest. So Krishna is the biggest and the jivas were the smallest. If you have the internal potency, you also have the external. But it's not important, right? For interaction and serving Krishna, it's not important. But because jivas are involved in the material energy, then Krishna, you know, and the purpose of by Krishna's will that it's manifest is so that the living entities then can therefore serve Krishna. And then by serving Krishna, then they can be connected with the internal potency. So in this way, then the external potency has value in that it can be an environment at which you can perform those activities that bring you closer to Krishna under the protection of the internal potency. If the word svena means by itself, spontaneously, the statement, it would become meaningless since Maya is defeated by the Lord's Dhamma in the sentence, right? So by Krishna's power, then it's there. So we see the Dham means the place of manifesting the Lord's power, where you see the wonderful existence that he performs his pastimes in, all the personalities, the forms that everybody has, all the devotees, then all the qualities that everybody has, right? You know, all the possibilities of interaction, right? All the techniques, all the knowledge, all that. So all these energies that are manifest there, but it's in a static position. Because it's just there. And so now when the devotees using their willpower apply those qualities of knowledge and everything, means in an active state, that's then where that directed at Krishna, that churns rasa. Right? But the Dham itself, just the existence itself, you know, has a is transcendental and does give happiness. But for the devotees, that happiness goes beyond, because the dham means they remember the Lord and the devotees in their pastimes. So if you go to a particular place, it's about the pastime that happened there, right? Because otherwise, as far as existence, it's all existing. It's all there. It's all a manifestation of its potency. But when you add in the interaction, the Abhideya and the Prayojana, then it becomes, that's where it becomes special. So the Sandini, its point is, it's the place in which the Sambit and Ladini potencies then act, and that's bhakti. That gives the highest pleasure. If Swena Dhamna were to mean by his sarup, the meaning would be redundant. However, one may explain it, the word Swena Dhamna must mean by his shakti, which is characterized by destroying illusion. That is clear by the use of the instrumental case, dhamna, which indicates a means of most effective accomplishment. And that means by surrendering to Krishna, you see, then we meditate upon him, then in that position through his shaktis, then everything becomes bhava. Calcutta has arrived. Or at least dum-dum. That object which is different from its effect, known as Maya, is the sarup of the Lord. Okay. This is how the sarup of the Lord should be understood. That object which is different from its effect, known as Maya, is the sarup of the Lord. So, in other words, you have the objects that are there, that the energy is the Lord. So that which is different than that, that's his sarup, right? Because the Lord, his sarup is the source of that energy, that shakti. So when you look back, what's not the shakti, which is the source of the shakti, that's his sarup. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Thus, the Shruti say, Satyam, Jnanam, Anandam, Brahma. Brahman is existence, knowledge, and bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad. Oh, well. Satyam, Jnanam, Anandam, Brahma. Okay, Satchitananda. Taittiriya Upanishad 213. Vijnanam, Anantam, Brahma. Brahma is knowledge, unlimited nature, and bliss. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28. The word Satyam in the Bhagavatam verse thus hints at the authority of the Shruti. Thus, along with the words of Lord Sarup, Satyam, the Sarup Shakti is directly indicated by Dhamna Svena. So you have both of those aspects. Right, so the Satyam is Krishna Sarup, and the Dhamna Svena, right, will be his, like that. So, what is it? Thus, the nature of Bhagavan, possessor of Shakti, is made clear, because that's where all these other philosophies, that's where their weakness starts, is they don't see the Lord as a person with shaktis, right? And he's the source of their shaktis. So because he's not the source of the shaktis, then they just see the shaktis on its own and acting on its own. So they just see that it's running, you know, just like we see a car going on its own, but actually there's someone driving it. Right, you know, even you say, oh no, but we have an unmanned vehicle, there is someone driving. They just may not be sitting in the vehicle, but it's still being, you know, someone is driving. And so Yes, so that's where the problems start. They can only go up to the Shakti, and that stops there. They don't make the connection between the Shakti and the Lord. So if the Shakti is there and is controlled by the modes, then if the Lord comes, then he's coming within the context of the material energy. So therefore, then he must be under the control of the modes also. But if he's the source, then no, he's not, because he being the source of that, he's not under that. And so therefore, then he, by his own internal potency, is functioning within the external potency. Like that. So therefore, the satyam tamna svena. He that's.
All right.
Yeah.
Like we see here how, though the Mayavadis project some other statements of Upanishads as the Mahavakyas, all the Mahavakyas are there in these first two verses of Bhagavatam of the Upanishads.
Yes. 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 All the main. So because we'll take it that these are what was see by our conditioning. We look at, view things from the inductive process. And so, from this inductive process, then we're looking at it that, okay, the first thing that Prabhupada taught was, this sambandha avideya prayoja, basically. That sambandha is that we're not the body, we're the jiva, we're servant. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, Bhagavan. Possession of all opulences, and so yes, and then with that understanding, that identity, then we engage our senses in the service of the Lord of the senses to please Krishna in pure devotion, and attain to the ultimate goal of prema, and chanting Hare Krishna is the main process that is there that we're using. So it's the process, it's the goal. So that's been taught right at the beginning, right in the 60s, Prabhupada would teach that. So now, by the educational process that we have been following, you could say basically for since time immemorial, then we're always going to start with ourselves and look at the things. And but the, even starting with ourselves, that's not so much the problem. But the inductive, the problem is you start with the simplest things. And then you move up to more and more complex items. And so you're trying to get to the platform of the complex items. And by the complex items, by the complexity, then you expect in that complexity to find, the essential points. So they're actually running an educational process backwards. Because the Vedic is, it's descending. So yes, it is simple because when you bring everything together, reconcile everything, it's very simple. Right? It's complicated when it's not reconciled. But when you bring it together, it's reconciled. So therefore, this Sambandha Abhideya approach and those things that Prabhupada gave here, that's the original position. That's the main thing. So it's actually the top that after that, everything else will be connected to there. There is nothing that will not be connected to that. Right? And so then you're just building on that, understanding how we're not the body, we're the soul, how we're a servant, and what that means, a servant, what that means as a jiva. How does that build up? How does he, as the supreme absolute truth, as Bhagavan, the six opulences, how does that develop? The relationship we have with them, how does that develop? Devotional service of anything's chanting, how does that develop? All the different things come around it. So all those things that expand, those are our details. And so details can get more and more complex as the one comes expands from the next one. So as you expand it, the effects get more and more complex. Right? Because why? Because you have one absolute truth that everything's coming from. When you have some these three principles of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana come out, that they can balance. But sometimes we see, oh, but is this here and is that there? Already Prajumna, you can either look at them as the set that subtle part or the attitude of Sambandha, or you can look at them as the nature of activity. the knowledge and activity being applied practically. So in other words, the theory of Abhideya. Right? But in any case, whether you see him in the one or the other, whether you're taking Vasudeva's Abhideya, or you're taking Vasudeva as the apply, the practical, actual Abhideya, and that, and Aniruddha as the Prayojana. But so therefore you can see the other three as the concepts of that. So in other words, you're going to have Sambandha Jnana, and it's going to be the theory. Then you're going to have the theory of Abhideya, the theory of Prayojana. Right? All that's technically Sambandha Jnana, because otherwise, what's the point of having a knowledge that doesn't show a practical application in the goal? Otherwise, does it actually have an existence? If it doesn't, an object is considered complete when it has existence, it has uniqueness, it has an activity, and it has a purpose. So therefore, if we're saying knowledge, and knowledge is actually real, it has substance, it has to have all these four aspects. Right? Therefore, then, that's going to be your Sambandha Jnana. Then when you apply that practically, that's Abhideya, and when you get the results, that's Prayojana. But in that, you're going to have discussed what action is and what result is. Does that make sense? So already by this, they're starting to get a little bit. And then as you go more, as it goes, because you have these different points, then you see they contradict each other. You know, so then we have Satchidananda, we have Samvit Sandini Ladini, we have internal, external, marginal, we have Jnana Kriya Icha, you know. And so then we'll see, but these all contradict. No, they don't. They're all discussing different facets of the same thing. So when you understand the principles, then you can see how all these connect back together. Right? Then it works really nicely. So because we're looking at it from the inductive, Prabhupada gave that in the beginning. That means that's for the newest people. I'm more advanced. So what's more advanced? You know, I've been given, we're not to buy with a soul and all that, and I've been given the chanting Hare Krishna as the activity. So as I become more advanced, then what can I do that's more difficult than the same someone new can't do? And so that's going to be the technical. The detail is then what's specific to an individual. And so therefore, some technical skills, some technical knowledge, you know, but either I go, you know, like that, or we don't worry about all these things and go into more a practical kind of just organizational kind of thing, or I get distracted by, you know, the sahajya kind of thing and get into that kind of thing. Well, this is higher, or I get distracted by an academic kind of thing and go into that and make that higher, or I work with the economics, and because I do that, because without money, nothing else happens. So, you know, you can't run the temple unless I collect. You can't worship the deities unless I collect. You have no place to stay unless I collect. In other words, collection is the central feature of Krishna consciousness. Without it, nothing else goes on. So therefore, I am the most senior and most advanced devotee. You know, don't you notice they say my name after Mangalarti? You know, when they read this course, they don't say the Pujari's name. They don't say the temple commander. They don't say anybody else's name, not even the president. They say my name. Right? And so like this, we can get distracted by all the aspects of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And so, and the more we get more technical detail, the more advanced we think it is. So that is what was mentioned on the previous page as guhakam, you know, where you get bewildered by Maya. You get cheated by Maya. So you think is that, yes, these are more technical, so that makes it more advanced. No, not that technical, yes, you need more association, more practice with it to be able to appreciate the details. But it's not the most advanced point. The most advanced point are the principles on which it's based, because it's descending. Right? So all the fingers come together at the hand, but we're used to it being this way. I start off with general knowledge, then I go out and I branch off and I learn so many things, then I specialize, then within that I specialize. So I'm a neural brain surgeon, but I'm only a neural brain surgeon on the front half of the right side. You know, if you're doing the front half of the left side, you got to get find another guy. I'm not your man. You know, so they specialize, and then that's the higher thing. Yes, in detail it's more, and yes, it does take more time and energy and all that. But the principle of what's going on, that is the important point. It means someone's like that, that's great, but then you're going to see, does he care? Does he take care of the patients? Does he actually do it? That's what you're going to look at. You know, is he Hippocratic or is he, what do you call it? Hippocratic, what's the other? Where you say, you know, yeah, is it Hippocratic or is it hypocrisy? You know, it means, in other words, is he, you know, he only looks like he knows the technique of a doctor, but it's only for money. He doesn't have the attitude of a doctor. Does that make sense? The Hippocratic's the oath that they take that we're going to care about people and help people. But they'll only help people if you have money or you have insurance. You know, so, you know, so it's hypocritical, not, does that make sense? Not Hippocratic, it's hypocritical. So that kind of thing is that it becomes reversed and we don't know what's going wrong. No, he's become so good like this. And because we look at economics and all this, and these are the high things, you have power, you have, in other words, the six opulences are there and he has more knowledge and technique. That must be the highest. But actually in the Vedic, it goes the other way around. And so if that's all you have, you're the lowest. That's why Naradhamma is the lowest. The Naradhamma is your neurobrain surgeon that has no interest in God consciousness. He's the lowest of mankind. Your dog is better than him. At least your dog will take prasad. Happily, with enthusiasm. Right? Well, he won't take it. You know? He might do stupid prasad, you give him some, and then so he gives it to a beggar or something like that. So he gets the benefit of distributing prasad. But that's the whole point, is that it's the opposite. But now you connect it to Krishna. Now it's nice because now it's absolute. So therefore, him is the doctor, someone else is the cook, someone else is cleaning the temple, someone else is doing samputan. Then they all are doing service to Krishna. You know, if you're looking at organizational thing, then he may have some more position. But if you're looking, let's say, at the puja, then he may have less. So like this, you have how you're organizing. Then you have, okay, what are the components of it? You know, just like if I'm cooking rice, so the rice pot, you know, and water and the rice are going to be what's important. But let's say I'm cooking chapatis, rice is not important at all. That pot for boiling is not important at all. So it doesn't mean it's anything less. It's just depending on the context, then something becomes more prominent. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we'll look at what does all this matter? It matters because when you have these aspects, then you appreciate that that means we have to be able to see how we're developing in our Krishna consciousness, in our knowledge, in our skills, in our whatever we're doing, that it still functions within the context of what we're of the basic principles, the fundamentals. You know, it's not that when you get more advanced in math, the numbers aren't used anymore. Right? The numbers stay. So, you know, we're taking, this basic, I don't need that. I just move on. That's like saying, the house. Since the house is the real thing we'll look at, do we actually need to have a foundation? No one sees the foundation. It's so much money, so much time, effort, like that. Why don't we just build the house without the foundation? And so then it'll fall down. So it's very important to understand in the descending, what's given, these are points that Prabhupada's always taught. These are the essential things. And as we get into more and more detail, if we can't connect the detail of what we're doing back to these principal points, there's every chance we're getting deviated. You know, like that. You know, because of that point, kuha come. So when you're absorbed in Krishna, then Maya can't get you. But if you're not absorbed in Krishna, then she's there. You're facing Krishna, you don't see her. You're facing away from Krishna, she's right there. The reason for the Lord being the chief existing being is shown in the phrase beginning yatra. In Lord Vasudev, yatra, who is situated everywhere since he is Brahman, the greatest, the creation made of the three qualities, devata, sense, of devata, sense and sense object, trisarga, right? Means you have the sense object, and you have the devata who's in charge of that. Right, because let's say you have the eye and you have form, you know, some form, but it means that, you know, that's there that you can see, but that ability to see, that's coming from the devata, right? And it's based on the principle that we see in the primary creation of forms, of what forms are there. Okay. He is Brahman, the creation made of three, is situated. So the creation based of this tree sarga is situated in the Lord. And that creation belonging to the Lord is not false. Amrisha, like the illusion of silver on seeing a shell. The creation is real since it is situated in the Lord at all times. As stated in the Shruti statement, Yato va imani jayante. From the Lord, these beings are born. Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.1. The Lord is real because it is created by the Lord alone. Okay. Samgya Murti Kliptis Tu Trivrit Kuravata Upadesha. I think there's a dot under that L. And that KLPTIS. Does it need? It needs a vowel there. Right. So then that would be the luri. You know, the one that our Sanskritists I think don't exist. The Lord mixes the names and forms after making the elements threefold, because that is the direct statement. Brahma Sutra 2.4.20. Right? So the direct statement, he mixes the names and forms after make, means you have all the elements what you can make, and then he produces all the forms and their nature and everything like that. Based right. on, yes.
So this daiva, sense and sense object, then you say they're related to adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik.
It's all the same kind of principle. It would be like you have the sense, it means you have the other, it'll have those, and it'll also have that aspect of the five Mahabhutas, right? Then you have the five senses, and then you have the tanmatras. So the tanmatras, that's the devatas. You know, it comes from the Lord. When the Lord wants to see, then everything else comes from the being. So it's original, the potency comes from him. But the devatas manage it. You know, that you can see, that's managed by the devatas. But ultimately, it's because the Lord sees, that's why we can see. Right? He sees. Seems our internet is unstable. Have we become stable again?
I think we can go on more.
Okay. The illusory nature is understood by an example. Tejo varimridam yata vidimaya. Just as placing parts of fire, water, and earth in each other for the manifesting the creation is not illusory, being the creation of the Lord. So the universe itself is not illusory. Imas tisro devatas tri vrid ekaika bhavati. Each of these becomes threefold. I think there's a dot under the R also. The Vrid. Chandogya Upanishad 6.3.4. Right. Right, because remember, Krishna, because he has those three features of Satchidananda, therefore everything is threefold. Or whatever is manifest has these kind of aspects. Yad Agni Rohitam Rupas Tejasas Tad Rupam Tat Chuklam Tad Apam Yat Krishnam Tat Prithivya Tad Annasya. In fire is the red form of fire, the white form of water, and the black form of earth. Chandogya Upanishad 6.4.1 says the meaning is based on Shruti. Other meanings of this phrase, based on imagination, are automatically rejected. Right? So Shruti is said this, so this is not just somebody's idea, but the Shruti itself is making the point. And so then if Shruti is establishing these three features of the Lord is real, therefore the creation is real. Then we don't have to worry about all these other discussions that go on based on imagination. They're not important. They're rejected. Right. So as we saw before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out that Shankaracharya put into a lot of effort to give indirect meanings to all the Vedic statements to disprove, you know, the actual proper meaning of the Vedas, because he wants to establish an imaginary concept. Right, because he's, you know, there's a purpose for it. He's not at fault. He's trying to bring the Buddhists back into the Vedic authority, as opposed to not following Vedic authority. Because that was the first thing Buddha did, was then don't listen to the Vedas. Right. So that's, if you start with, you have Karmakandiya Brahmins, and they're misapplying the Veda to the point where they can't even understand anything else other than their self-motivated, you know, position of sense gratification. That's, you know, and their methods are opposed, the attitude methods are opposed. Therefore, if they're going to base everything on that, then the first thing to do is remove the Veda, right? And then having removed the Veda, then you get them into being peaceful. And how do you get them into being peaceful? By not wanting anything. How do you not want anything? By saying there's nothing. Right, and so now we're going to have to, you know, then you're going to take those same Buddhists, and now you're going to try to bring them into, then if that nothing becomes Brahman, like that, you know, that self same thing of now just doing this work, you know, for it doesn't matter, you just a waste of time. But now you do Naishkarmi and not doing something like spending too much making this beautiful, huge mandala on this huge sheet like that. And after spending so many months, once it's done, you know, then they ceremony, you know, through a ceremony, then pick up the corners and everybody just picks it up. So it all just all goes together and that's it, you know, that it all merges. You know, it's a waste of time, stuff like that. You know, it made them focus. They weren't doing nonsense. They're not killing animals. So it's great. But now is that now you're doing nice karma, and then where's it all based on? On the Veda. So you brought them from their place back into the Veda. But at the same time is you've just taken what they're doing and shifted it over. That's all. You've just shifted them from one to the next. Right? And so then naturally that's what he's doing. Now, once he gets it to there, he got them now back into the Vedic. Now it's the Vaishnava Acharyas. Now their business is to bring them now to the proper conclusion. To interpret the phrase to mean simply a combination of fire, water, and earth, modifying Trisarga, is not pleasing to those who know the meaning of words. Right, because otherwise you can come up with all kinds of things if you want. In combination with the word yata, as if real, it would mean that fire, water, and air are like mirages. According to this view, the universe would not have a real creation from Brahma, but an attributed or illusory creation that arises from mistaking one object for another, right? Because they're saying that the silver and the shell, so it's not actually real. You know, just taking that aspect of it. But the point is that you're saying is that these elements, they're real, therefore everything that you're dealing with is real. So then if you look at that, then you'll say, oh, but then you'll just be an illusion. No, then you'll go, okay, this is a shell. And the shell looks like silver, but it's not silver. But the shell exists that looks like silver. That means that there is silver that exists. Where's the silver? So that's very important. If you want to go back to Godhead, you have to understand its realness. Because the Lord's real, therefore all the emanations from him are also real. But you have to understand is that just as there's a shell that exists and there's silver that exists and they look similar, but the shell does not have the quality or the value of the silver. So in the same way, the material world exists, it's real. But it doesn't have the value that the spiritual realm has. The dham na svena, it means that original dham, that where his energies are manifested in a natural transcendental position. So the material world's real. So this idea of this attachment to a world is illusion. No, that's not important, that it's an illusion. Right? We don't care for that aspect. Because it's an illusion to think that the shell is silver. That's the illusion. When you think the shell has the same value as silver. But the point is that then to throw all of that out and say, now that's a value. You know, in other words, I'm mistaking the shell for silver, and that's an illusion. And so the silver doesn't exist, the shell doesn't exist, nothing exists, and that's going to be the perfection. Wouldn't it be logical that find the silver, that's the real, that's where the substance is? Why would they think as, okay, this is not, that's not, get rid of everything? You know, that doesn't make sense. It's not logical. And this is the fun part. This is the real, what do you call it? Kuhakam, the real cheating that Maya thinks that they're because they're using an intellectual method, but what they're saying has no intellectual value at all. It's not logical at all, though they pride themselves in logic. You see that the Maya bodies, they always pride themselves that they're intellectuals and they have so much knowledge and all that. But he just, the knowledge stolen by illusion. That's Maya Pratigyana. And the Buddhists, they also, that they spend their time debating, you know, to establish their philosophy and all that. That's part of their sadhana. So here's that the point is that it's real, it arises from the Lord. The illusion is mistaking something of inferior quality as it is something of superior quality. And that's why we get frustrated. So if you take the shell and you try to go buy something with it, you won't get the value of silver. Right? Like that. And so you get frustrated. And so in getting frustrated, then you go, okay, let's just forget it all, throw it all out. Right? So you say, throw it all out. That will make you better. Why not just search out the silver? If you want to buy things that require silver, why not look for the silver? Rather than just saying, oh, it's all illusion. Then it's just like the fox and the grapes. The fox can't get at the grapes, they're too high. So then he says, oh, the grapes are sour, so they're not worth it. You know? I mean, it's a good trick for the mind. So, since they don't have real substance, then they have to use these tricks. But the actual thing is you get a higher taste by tasting Krishna consciousness. That's then what makes it work. That's what moves it forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to understand this. Yes, these things are real. We go after things, but unless they're brought back to the original, that's why then, okay, you have the idea of, I've been in the movement a long time. You know, I have a bit of an intellectual capability or capacity. So therefore, let me use that in Krishna's service by, studying the scriptures, teaching the scriptures, in some way, learning that to preach for Krishna, rather than just thinking, no, it's the degree that's important, right? The academic method of thinking is important. That's it taught me to think, but it taught you to think wrong. It taught you to think backwards. So, it's just like probably gives the example of that famous school in Vienna, music school, that if you go to the school and you've never touched a violin in your life, then there's one fee. But if you've already done some violin lessons and all that, if you want to get into the school, the fee is higher. Why? You think, no, he already knows something. He's already done, 5 years of music and all that. So, how can we get a good deal? No, it'll cost you double. Why? Because we have to unteach all that 5 years. So that's the difficulty, is that when it comes to giving the descending method, no one catches it. Why? Because they've been indoctrinated with this other system. Maya has tricked them, kuhakam. He's cheated them. And because of that, they can't understand what is the actual thing. Because there, okay, you like to manage, organize. What are you organizing that everyone's hearing and chanting? It's not something, it's not that, no, I manage this nicely, so therefore it's perfect. No, are people hearing and chanting? That's how you know it's perfect. I'd be like, I cooked, I followed the recipe, I did all the things like that. But Prabhu, it has no taste. Well, that doesn't matter. I did everything perfectly. I came in at the right time. I finished at the right time. I did all the things like that on the pasuwar. It was like, it was perfect. But Prabhu, there's no taste. What does that matter? He's thinking, what does that matter? But that's the whole point. The cooking is to get the proper taste. So in the same way is that anything that you take, If it's not, you make lots of money. Okay, he makes so much money, but is he Krishna conscious? Is other people being Krishna conscious? Like that. So if he's not, then what's the point? It's just a way to engage. In other words, you have to be looking for the silver. You can't say that, my shell is better than your shell. Oh, you have a little dinky shell. I got a real big shell. Look at the amount of looking like silver that I got. But the point is it's just the same. It's all illusion. So therefore, if we understand this, no, it's a shell, right? And the example they're going to say is, no, it's illusion. It looks like silver, but it's not silver. Yes, but it's a shell, and there is silver. So this is the material world that looks like the spiritual world, but it's just like that. It just looks like it. It's not actually. It's temporary. It's full of miseries. That's why it's there. So it's given up for the spiritual world. How is it given up? By engaging here in the service of the eternal. It's not something else. Nanda Baba, has an occupation, has cows. He does management. He does all these things. But he does it all to please Krishna. So we do the same thing here. That's the whole point, is that these simple points, we're given that this is what we do for Krishna, right? And we take it, oh, these are basic. No, this is what they do in the spiritual world. That they all do things together. They talk about Krishna. They do kirtan. They take prasad. They worship the Lord. These are all the things they do in the spiritual world. That's the essential point. That's the basic point. And then from that, taking that to your own home, you're associated with everybody in the temple. From home, you associate with the others, around your area, you come to the temple like that. you make like that. You have service in the temple. You do all day. You're doing things for the deities. Nobody, you're at home, so you have to go out. You have a job. But the point is the results of that have to be connected to Krishna. So if what Prabhupada is given in that original Krishna conscious lifestyle, you take that out anywhere and you follow the same principle, though the detail may change, then you've actually understood. But if in going out, the detail changes and you think that's the important thing, oh, I'm being practical, Prabhu. It's like, well, okay, you're being practical. How is the primary thing being attained? That's not, how is that practical? Well, you got to eat. It says, why? The devotees in the temple aren't eating? I got to pay the bills. Why, they're not paying bills? You're the only one on the planet paying bills. No one else pays bills. So that's the difficulty, is that it's this primary points how it's the Lord. It's all the Lord. It's all him. It's all pervaded by his Shakti. He defines how something acts. He takes the earth, the water, the fire. He takes the form. He makes them into the different things. He gives them their nature. And so therefore, that's it is. So what do? I'm in this position, And so how do I use this in the present for Krishna's service? Right? That's what we're trying to do. Then all these other details, then they're good. They're nice. They're important. They have their place, but they're not the primary. You can't start from the tactical and think that you're going to get to this strategy. You have to start from the strategy and then see what's the operational, what's the tactical, and then finally, what's the particular technical that you require. Otherwise, if I get to one technical and I always try to apply that, but if it doesn't match the situation, what does it matter? I'm a carpenter. I have a hammer. Okay, they put me in the kitchen. Okay, what can I hit with the hammer? Okay, there's a pumpkin. I can hit the pumpkin. So it's you have to know is that no, it starts off with, it starts at the top, then it descends. So because it starts from the top, Krishna, he's real. Therefore, what expands from him is real, but its reality is dependent upon him. So as soon as you disconnect his energies from him, then the whole process becomes unconscious, becomes dead. That's what external energy is. It's unconscious, dead matter. And so that's what you're going to deal with. And as soon as you see it all in connection with Krishna, now it's alive. You're dealing with the internal potency, with the yoga mind. But if you don't, you're dealing with mana mind. So it's really, really simple. And so with that principle in mind, that's accepted, then you can look at how to apply the detail. But we'll go, oh, no, but in this detail, it doesn't work or that detail. So we'll try to throw out the principle by some detail that we have a doubt or misgiving about. So that's why the first thing is the main point is given. So the subject matter is given. This is the topic. Having been given the topic, then people will have doubts. You remove those doubts, and then you reconcile all that. And then you bring that to, you remove any opposition, and then you bring it to a conclusion. Right? According to this view, the universe would not have a real creation for Brahma, but an attributed or illusory creation that arises from mistaking one object for another. This mistake, Brahma, arises from similarity between objects, right? Because the shell and the silver are similar. That's why it comes up. Similarly, similarity creates a basis for one object being mistaken for another by a difference in time. But one could mistake silver for shell as well as mistaking shell for silver. Similarly, Brahman is mistaken for the world, but the world could also be mistaken for Brahman. There is no rule that there can be only one object as a basis of illusion. Right? That's not the point. It could go both ways. Many objects instead of one Brahman could create an illusion of one object. Oh, many objects instead of one Brahman could create an illusion of one object. For instance, one can mistake a combination of smoke, mountain, and forest at a distance for one big cloud. Thus, the illusion of the world could be created not by one Brahman, but by many real entities. Right? You come up with it. It could be. It means if you're going to get into the speculative thing, all these options are there. But they're saying, no, it's only this. But they're dealing with this aspect of illusion already. So why can't the illusion go the other way? Why can't the world be Brahman? And Brahman is what they're talking about. Brahman's an illusion. You know, so all these different things, if you're getting to the speculative thing, then you can get really weird, right? In this theory, the creation of three factors from time appears to our perception without beginning. Brahman manifests by itself, by its pure consciousness. Though the jiva covered by ignorance without beginning will mistake the creation to be real because of similarity to a really existing Brahman, why could he not identify with an illusory Brahman emanating from a real creation? Right? But if one did not discern Brahman on the basis, the whole theory would fail. Right? So basically, their whole theory of illusion then is a problem because silver could also be mistaken for shell. So you could think things of this world as Brahman, like you see, it's a Hindu. Oh, my baby is Brahman. You know, my baby is God. You know. And like that. And so then, you know, you get all these kind of things as they take the material and make that spiritual and this and that and all these different things. So it goes both ways. So they don't see, they'll say, oh, but they're at a lower level. But the point is it's all this is illusion. So all of it could be correct. Why is it you think you're the advanced one? You're the one suffering. They're the one enjoying. So if you're talking about Ananda, why is it, you know, they're not there? Matter itself cannot mistake one object for another, since it is insentient, and nor can pure consciousness, since it is not aware of anything except itself, and should not fall into ignorance. Brahman is pure consciousness according to the impersonals, right? So Brahman would not be able to understand anything else other than itself, right? And then matter can't understand anything because it's unconscious. To prove their argument, they say that Shruti is the basis of proof. However, aropya means seeing something where it is actually not present, but which exists elsewhere. Since this condition does not exist in their theory, a world actually existing elsewhere, it is impossible to impose the existence of an illusion of the world upon Brahman. Right? So how does Brahman become illusion by coming into the material world? Since Brahman is beyond, you know, even by their own thing. Matter is unconscious, and Brahman is only conscious of itself. So how could it come under the material control, right? Because they'll be saying is that there's only the Lord, and then you have the material energy, and they disconnect the two. So if the Lord comes here, he has to be under the material energy, rather than no, he has the Shaktis, the material energy is a transformation of his energy. So when he comes here, he comes in his own personal energy, untransformed. And around him is all the transformed energy that we're dealing with. Since the world arises from the Lord, endowed with his Shakti, by taking the literal meaning of Shruti, the world actually exists in him, who is everything. Right? So because they take the non-literal, therefore they come up with so much problem. Therefore, the creation is not an aropya or illusion imposed on Brahman, right? Because that's what they do, right? They take it, their idea, then they look at the Shastra and then impose that idea. That's why then you hear from the Acharyas. Because the Acharyas won't make that mistake of imposing something on Brahman. But we follow them, then we will avoid that. The theory of aropya is completely false, since the Lord is never contaminated by anything, because he possesses inconceivable Shakti, as stated in Tam Nas Vena Sadad Nirasta Kuvakam. The Lord exists, the world exists because of the Lord's existence. Thus it is said, Eka Desha stitas yajner jyoshna vishtarani yata. The Lord is like a fire situated in one place, which spreads its light. Vishnu Purana 1:22-56. Thus, the Lord is the chief existent being, and the creation is not false, right? Because you want to establish that the creation is real. So there, the Acharya just went through explaining how the it's real because he being conscious of everything, then how can he be I say under the material energy since it's not conscious of itself, right? Just as we're part of parcel of him, we're conscious. He's the supreme conscious. Material matter energy is not conscious. So how can he be under that? We're small. We can be under. Shruti says, Satyasya satam iti tata prana vai satyam pesham eva satyam. His name is the existent among all existent things. Jivas are existent. He is the life of the jivas, right? So he is the existent that all other existences are within, right? The jivas exist, so that means the jivas, their life is coming from the Lord. So he is existence of exist of what exists. Jiva exists, therefore the Lord is the life of the jiva. Does that make sense? Using logic here. Krishna is the his name is the existence, right? And then all things that exist are based on his name. Jivas exist, they're also based on Krishna. This quotation shows that the Lord is the highest existing entity, the root cause of all gross and subtle entities indicated by word prana. They are also called satya or existing. After indicating the Lord with his secondary characteristics, his effects, right? To make it clear that Bhagavatam is not a commentary on, no, to make it clear that Bhagavatam is a, where's that? That Bhagavatam is a commentary on the Brahma Sutras. The first sutra is answered with Janmadyasya Yataha in the Bhagavatam verse, Janmadi, beginning with creation, means creation, maintenance, and destruction. It is a Tadguna Samvijnana compound of the Bahuvrihi type. Asya means of the universe composed of doers and enjoyers from Brahma down to the two non-living entities, non-moving entities. The shelter, oh, there's the far away. Oh, okay. You got an N in between. Brahma down to non-moving entities. The shelter of actions caused by different times and places, which creates a variety inconceivable to the mind. Yata means from the Lord, who takes the form of upadana, material cause by his inconceivable shakti, and acts as the agent of creation. Quote, we should meditate on that Supreme Lord, Param Dhimahi, from whom, acting as Upadana and agent, arise the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. Right? So he is the ingredients through his energy. He is the ingredients, but he's also the energies that are the agents by which these ingredients become transformed. So all that's coming from him, because as it said before, effect is always found in the cause. And so otherwise, where would these come from? That's what's unanswered by all the other schools of philosophy. They cannot answer, where does it come from? Even modern science, they can't say where it's come from. Right? Statements on this subject are as follows, are following. Are the following. Yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti, yat prayant yabisham bishanti ti. Oh, yat prayant yabisham bishanti tad vijigyasasva tad brahma. Know that it is Brahman from whom all these beings arise, by whom they live, and in whom they enter at destruction. No? Petru Upanishad 3.3.1. Tatte jo srijata. His power created the universe. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. Creation and destruction is a general description and does not imply that the Lord is limited to these actions. Thus, one does not meditate on the creation and destruction of the universe as the Lord himself, right? Because these are just part of something that he can do. So the creation and destruction is not him himself. He's a creator, he's a destroyer, that's all he is. No, that's, as Paramatma, he takes care of these things. But his nature is well beyond this. One should meditate on Brahman as a pure being. Moreover, what is suggested is that the Lord possesses all Shaktis, Satya Sankalpa ability, all knowledge and all control. Because he is the cause of creation and destruction of the universe, which is endowed with qualities previously described. Ya Saravagya Saravavid Yasya Jnanamayam Tapaha. From Brahman, who is omniscient, knowing everything, whose austerity is filled with knowledge, arose Brahman as food, which has name and form. Sarvasya Vasi. The Lord controls everything. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Also, it is indicated by dint of being supreme, the Lord's Sarup is devoid of all inferior or negative elements and endowed with unlimited auspicious qualities like knowledge. Na tasya karayam karanam cha vidyate. The Lord has no material senses or body. Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.19. According to those who say that one should inquire about an object with no qualities, it would not be suitable that one should inquire about Brahman from whom the universe is created. Since the statement does not state the supreme greatness of Brahman, but rather states that he is the cause of creation and destruction of the universe, his quality. However, the Shrutis examined in later sutras do not prove a Brahman without qualities. Logical argument also is not a proof for a Brahman without qualities, since one must use qualities in referring to an object in the argument, right? So this is the fun part, is that you're going to refer to if you want to discuss Brahman and argue and establish Brahman, how are you going to do that? You're going to do it by explaining qualities that Brahman has. It's unlimited. It's pure. It's consciousness. It's unchanging. These are all qualities. And then you're going to say Brahman has no qualities. So how could the Shastra be establishing a Brahman with no qualities when just to explain Brahman, you're explaining it through the qualities that Brahman has, right? Otherwise, how does it have an existence if it doesn't have that uniqueness, right? That's the whole point. Without Visesha, it doesn't have uniqueness. So it wouldn't exist. How is it different than, your flower pot or, your armchair like that? It has a uniqueness. However, the Shrutis examine. Logical argument also is no proof for Brahman without qualities, since one must use qualities in referring to the object in the argument, which must necessarily ensue in the object to be proved. One cannot prove Brahman without qualities by giving the example of a Brahman which is responsible for an illusion of creation. The basis of illusion, Brahma, is ignorance, ajnana. This would mean that Brahman must be a witness to ignorance. Witnessing can only mean a revelation of knowledge, right? So then they can relate to that, they can see that, so then that would be part of the knowledge. Revelation excludes anything unconscious by dint of its natural ability to relate the self to another object. So that means that Brahman is seeing these things, That means Brahman is conscious and is aware. And that means there's a thought process that, because you're saying revelation, that means there's a thought process. They're just pure consciousness. This means this existence, just this nothingness. Like that. So that's why we say it's actually Buddhism, because they're just saying it's just that existence, it's just nothingness. So, but that's not supported by the Shastra, because they all talk about qualities. Revelation excludes anything unconscious by dint of its natural ability to relate the self to another object, right? So you see yourself and another object, so that's already two. That ability means having qualities. Without that, the ability to reveal objects cannot take place. Thus, the argument for a Brahman without qualities are meaningless. But it doesn't stand, especially when they say, well, there's Brahman that's creating. That means that you're able to see, you're able to do, you have, you know, like this. So they're saying that Brahman is the basis because they have to, because they say everything's Brahman, but at the same time it's unconscious. But here it means no, it's conscious. That means there's qualities. That means Brahman is Sagun. Because they're saying the Sagun is under the control of the material energy. But that can't be. He has to be beyond.
All right.
Yes.
Also, it's interesting that the Mayavadis, they never speak about the primary qualities of the Jiva, which we discussed before, that Jiva himself is also a consciousness giver and a self-revealer. And he doesn't require any external matter to reveal himself.
Right.
Because these are all the qualities of the Brahman, which the Jiva inherits. So they don't discuss the primary qualities. All their discussion is about the secondary qualities, that how the Jiva comes and then how he's functioning under the control of Maya. So it's always has to be.
Yeah, because then otherwise, then how you'll become Brahman, if you're already conscious and you're already self-revealing, how do you become the Brahman? You're already Brahman, but you're this big. So, but they want to be the whole thing, you know. So yeah. So they're going to leave it out. That's interesting, right? Yeah. So they don't actually, the important points they don't actually discuss. And how are we doing here? If one takes the phrase Tejo Vardi Ridam to support the idea that the universe is an illusion, then the phrase Janmadyasya Yataha, from Brahman came creation and destruction of the universe, becomes meaningless, right? It means that if you're taking it, no, it means this, but then what is the first one? Then that doesn't mean it. Why would in one shloka, one part of the shloka defeats another part of the shloka? Therefore, the Lord has qualities, and that is in the form of his shaktis, right? The antaranga, bahiranga, tatastha shaktis were described. The direct cause of the creation of the universe filled with change is the bahiranga shakti. It is called maya. The tatastha shakti is represented by the persons who meditate upon Brahman. Brahman, Satyam Param Ki Mahi. So the living entities, they meditate upon Brahman. So if they're under the control of the external energy by meditating on Brahman, as it said before, by that Dhamna Swena, by his potency, one overcomes the material energy. Right? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.